the rubble to still try to find some people who might be alive. But right now, well, we're going to go to another borough, and that's Brooklyn, because at about 5 o'clock, thousands of people gathered at Court Street and Atlantic Avenue, the heart of the Arab American community, to show their support for Arab Americans and Muslims. Perhaps an unlikely sound that was part of this vigil as people walked from the Arab American business district to the promenade that looks out on the southern landscape of Manhattan, used to be the World Trade Center towers, now simply smoke. An unlikely sound at this vigil was the sound of the shofar that will be heard around the country and around the world tonight for the beginning of the holiest days of the Jew, and that is Rosh Hashanah. The sound of the shofar was blown last night for the Muslims and Arab Americans and safety.
بسم الله الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا رسول الله اللهم ارحم الأموات
آمين
اللهم ارحم الأموات
آمين
اللهم ارحم الأموات
آمين
اللهم ارزق أهلهم وذويهم الصبر والسلوان
آمين
وعوضهم خيرا يا رب العالمين
آمين
اللهم عليك بالمجرمين فإنهم لا يعجزونك
آمين
اللهم عليك بهم جميعا فإنهم لا يعجزونك
آمين
صل اللهم على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم
My name is Khadr El Yateem. My main concern at the church is to make sure our we are also affected by this tragedy, and we have our own losses in this tragedy. And we just try to work with the community to participate as much as we can, to offer whatever we can to the community, the healing process.
Which is your church?
It's Salam Arabic Lutheran Church in Berridge, Brooklyn.
And who have you lost?
Well, we have community. We have two people who died in the crash. Yeah, and we have a few people from our church who've been attacked because they are Arabs.
What has happened to them?
One person, some of the people went and throw eggs at his house. The other person, about 5 or 7 youth, went to his store, destroyed the sign, throw dirt on the goods he has in the store, and wrote some words, graffiti, which is insulting.
What is being done about that?
Well, we are working closely with the police and with the city council, Marty Golden, to try to bring the community to speak about peace and understanding, and to promote this unity in our community. So we've been taking an active role to
You're Palestinian American?
Yes, I'm Palestinian Christian, yes.
Mm-hmm. What about the response in the occupied territories right now?
Well, everybody there is saddened by the attack, and I've been in very close touch with my family there, and they're still in shock. They couldn't believe it, or they still cannot believe it, that this has happened.
Where does your family live?
We live in Beit Jala, which is 5 minutes north of Bethlehem.
Can you give me your phone number to be in touch with you?
74... K-H-A-D-E-R.
And
you need the last name? E-L-Y-A-T.
You're listening to the sounds of the vigil for Arab Americans and Muslims.
Last question.
M. Yes.
What do you think of the possibility of a retaliatory attack?
Well, I think that will be so soon to speak about that, but I strongly disagree with it until we find out exactly what happened and how to deal with the situation.
I pray next to Muslims and Christians and Jews and members of all other faiths for one simple reason, because terrorism does not want us to stand together. And therefore, the most effective response here is that we of different faiths stand together.
I'm Andrew Stettner, and I'm with Jews for Racial and Economic Justice. And, you know, we're here today because we're shuddering that the impact of the World Trade Center attack is being felt all over the country by Arab Americans and Muslims. There have been over 200 attacks in the country, and Arab Americans say they're increasing. And we're very afraid, and we're afraid that the lives of those who are lost will be taken in vain by bombings throughout the Islamic world. So we're here with a lot of fear and really shuddering at the impact, and but confident and hopeful that there's beginning to be a popular movement that is beginning to say this is not the way to mourn just an incredibly terrible loss that we're all bearing.
My name is Purvi Shah. I'm a board member at Sakhi for South Asian Women. And I'm here today, one, because one of my friends was in two World Trade Center and she is still missing, Swarna Chelasani, who is a longtime Sakhi volunteer. I'm also here today not only to condemn the terrorist attack and to grieve, but also because there has been a lot of anti-Muslim and anti-Arab American violence in the city and across the nation. And we wanted to condemn both the violence of the terrorist attacks and the violence and hate crimes that are occurring now. Swarna worked as a part of Sakhi for peace in her everyday life. She worked with battered women to advocate for peace, to advocate their health and safety. And I think it's so sad to see that the outcome of this terrorist attack has been to create more violence in our lives instead of more peace. And so we wanted to share with other people with of all faiths, all ethnicities, all cultural backgrounds, a stand for peace, and to really question what we're doing here. What does it mean to retaliate? What does it mean to have a war on terrorism? What does it mean to have a war on terrorism when you're going to terrorize innocent people? And to really raise those questions as ordinary citizens, because I think right now it seems like we're helpless. It seems like there's not much we can do, but it's really our voices that matter and count right now. So that's part of why we came here today.
What do you think of the media coverage of the attack and the aftermath?
I think, I saw the buildings fall from my Brooklyn window, and I've been consistently re-traumatized by seeing that image played over and over again, especially having a friend who is missing. It's a traumatic scene to see continuously the buildings fall and all the mayhem. I wish the media would focus on a lot of the healing and grieving and energy that people are putting into making a healing ceremony or a peace out of this terrible tragedy that's happened. And I also feel that the media has not been very critical of the president's warmongering stance on this whole situation. I feel like the media has fed into his approach of dealing with this situation by continuously displaying these scenes of grieving and heightening the tragedy in that way. Whereas I feel like BBC World and other media in other countries have noticed the ways in which this tragic attack does not come out of nowhere, that it has a historical series of precedents. The media has covered the ways in which Israeli tanks are now in the West Bank and the other kinds of after effects that this tragedy has had. In fact, terrorism wants to splinter us apart, and we are helping that to happen. We are helping to fuel the war that bin Laden would want us to have. And I feel it's the media's responsibility, as well as the responsibility of everyday people and our government who are refusing to act in peaceful ways, to create other options and to, of course, bring these terrorists to justice, but also not to produce more injustice in the world. I think one of the religious leaders at the National Prayer Ceremony said it so well. He said that we do not want to become the evil that we condemn. And I think that's a really beautiful way to put it.
Hi, this is Tom Tomorrow. We came down here to express our belief, our fervent hope that Arab Americans do not become a target of bigotry and hatred as a result of the terrible thing that we've all seen.
I'm sorry, I haven't seen if you've done any cartoons recently, have you?
Yeah, I've done a couple. I'm trying not to... this is going to be a very polarizing time, a very divisive time, and I'm trying... I think it's important to try to have a dialogue. I don't want to only preach to the choir at this point. So I did what I thought was very reasonable, very sort of low-key, just talking about how my sense that retaliation might lead to something worse, how we don't want to use this as an excuse to target Arab Americans, and how we don't want to see this used as an excuse to pull civil liberties. And even just that very, very, very measured thing has just gotten me a ton of very, very hateful email. People effectively comparing my work as a cartoonist in the newspaper with the act of the people who did this thing to us. And I'm just worried that I'm very worried about what's going to happen, but I'm worried that we're headed into a very divisive time, and I don't want to see it, and I don't know how to stop it, because people's immediate reaction is to, you know, is to gather together in the fort, and any voice of dissent whatsoever is sedition, is treasonous. And in fact, anyone is appalled by this, and certainly any decent thinking person believes that the people who did this should be brought to justice. There are just some of us who don't want to see the slaughter of innocent civilians responded to by slaughtering more innocent civilians. But I'm not even sure if I'm not even sure if you're going to be able to say that anymore. I'm not even sure if anyone's going to listen. The moment you suggest that there's any other course of action than a hardcore military strike, people just shut down. They won't listen. And I think on the left and the right, we've really all got to take a deep breath and listen to each other, because we are all Americans here. Nobody wanted this to happen. Nobody believed we should see this terrible destruction, this terrible loss of life. We just, you know, in this democracy, we are just coming at this from different points of view. And we've got to continue to be able to talk that out openly in this democracy, or else these guys have won. And I'm just afraid we're not going to. I'm afraid that's not going to happen.
Where can people see your work?
Well, I gotta say, cartoons just don't seem awfully important right now. But you know, if you really don't have anything better to do, you can see it at salon.com.
Cartoonist Tom Tomorrow joining thousands of others last night at a sunset vigil in Brooklyn, in the heart of the Arab American community. It was a vigil to call for the protection of Arab Americans and Muslims in this country in the face of rising attacks. In fact, this news has just flashed over the BBC website that an Afghani taxi driver was left paralyzed in London after a racist attack. You are listening to Democracy Now in Exile. When we return, we will go to Europe to find out reaction there to the preparations for an imminent attack and to the attacks that took place last week. We're doing a two-hour special today, and for those who are staying with us, Robert Fisk will be joining us from Lebanon to talk about his interview with Osama bin Laden. And we'll also be talking about the legislation, the counterterrorism legislation, that is rapidly being introduced into the House and the Senate that would severely curtail civil liberties and increase surveillance. Michael Ratner of the Center for Constitutional Rights will be joining us, and we'll be continuing to go into the streets to a rally that took place this weekend in Union Square Park. It was a rally to remember the dead, to give hope to those whose loved ones have not yet been found, and to speak out against war. Stay with us.
Some the light was worth a candle, the warmth was worth the cold, the conversation worth the wine, and what I've learned's been worth growing old. If I leave this world tomorrow, can say the light was worth a candle. At the end of the day, give it all you've got. Whatever you do, trust your heart. The journey is worth more, much more than the gold.
You are listening to Democracy Now! In Exile, Ground Zero Radio. Just continue to comb through the rubble, shipping it away. Tons of stones and cement, steel have been taken away over the weekend as the emergency personnel attempt slowly but surely to find at least a living person. It has been a very, very difficult last few days. While the weather has been good, there has been very little hope finding of people in the rubble. This piece by Ron Howell in Newsday, as New York struggled to return to its bustling self, preparing for the reopening today of public schools and the stock exchange, New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani invoked the memory of Winston Churchill, who 60 years ago rallied the British as they withstood Nazi air attacks on London. Just as Londoners had been heroes, Giuliani said, so too are New Yorkers. He said, we're not the first people that have gone through being attacked, pointing out that he's been reading the book 5 Days in London for courage over the past week. And in the New York Times today, in a piece by Suzanne Daly, after offering expressions of support immediately following this week's attacks on the United States, European allies are showing signs of backpedaling. The NATO allies have said they could support some military action, but now the caveats are beginning to roll in, making clear that the terror attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon will not translate into an unconditional writ for American retaliation. Particularly as talk in Washington has grown tougher, the allies have begun showing signs they want a carefully thought-out plan to combat terrorism, not a burst of military might that turns out to be brutal and ineffective. Many politicians have begun distancing themselves from Washington's saber-rattling. While President Bush has repeatedly described the terror attacks as acts of war, European officials are going out of their way to avoid such language. On a radio program, the Belgian foreign minister, Louis Michel, said the European Union is on watch and mobilized, but he added, we are not at war. In France, Prime Minister Lionel Jospin has cautioned there is no, quote, war against Islam or the Arab Muslim world. Moreover, he signaled that France would not automatically support military action, saying our humane political and functional solidarity with the United States does not deprive us of our sovereignty and freedom to make up our own minds. We turn now to Paris, France, to Imogen Lam, who is a reporter with RFI, Radio France International. Welcome to Democracy Now in Exile.
Thank you. Hello.
It's good to have you with us. Before we talk about Afghanistan, where you were in April, let's talk about France and the political climate there after the attacks on the United States.
I think France, like the other European countries, has reacted with full support for the United States in these very, very difficult times that it's going through. But, as you say, has been cautious in the use of the word war. Europe feels that it has to support the United States in these times, but it doesn't want to go so far as to speak of an all-out war in progress here.
What about the French left right now, the whole political spectrum? What kind of response?
What's extraordinary is that reading both right and left-wing newspapers, much of the commentary is very similar in expressing its support for the American people, at the same time pointing out that American foreign policy could very much be responsible in a way for what has happened because of the irresponsible attitude of American leaders in the past few years, to take just Afghanistan as an example, because of the involvement of the American government in that country over the years and the support that it gave the Taliban in the early years. And in this kind of reaction, there is very little difference, strangely enough, between right and left.
Imogen Lam, you have spent a good deal of time in Afghanistan, most recently in April. Can you talk about Afghanistan today, Afghanistan in the year 2001?
Afghanistan is a country that has been at war for over 20 years. It's a country that's almost totally destroyed. It has few or no infrastructures, and its people have suffered tremendously and are continuing to suffer terrible, unimaginable hardships. And the very thought that they're going to suffer even more in the days or weeks to come is absolutely frightening.
Can you talk about the people there, the people and the government?
Well, I think one has to be very careful when you talk about Afghanistan, you talk about the Taliban. The vast majority of people in Afghanistan are not Taliban. They are Afghan civilians who are suffering an extremely difficult situation. They're people who really have very little left. Many have been forced to flee their homes, forced to flee the country because of war, because of drought, because of famine in the past few years. I was in the center of the country, one of the parts worst hit by drought earlier this year. It hadn't rained there in 3 years. Drought, who had nowhere to go to, who had very little food to eat. I went through villages, towns where there was no more meat available, no eggs, no dairy producing country. It used to export wheat to its neighbors. And in towns, the situation is little better. In Kabul itself, the people are struggling to survive. One quarter of the population is surviving thanks to handouts by international organizations, particularly thanks to tea, black tea with no sugar, and that's all that these families are living on right now.
Imogen Lam, what about the women of Afghanistan? An issue that we hear something about. There's an organization, RAWA, the Radical Association of Afghani Women, that we get information from on the web. We have done interviews with them in exile in Pakistan, but there is not a tremendous amount known about what they are going through today.
Well, I can talk to you about the women of Kabul. I spent 2 weeks in Kabul, and I met many women in their homes, although I wasn't allowed to. Women are not allowed to receive foreigners in their homes. Their life is extremely difficult. They're not allowed to go out without a male member of their family to accompany them. They have no work because they're not allowed to work. For many, their husbands are unemployed because unemployment is rife. Since the Taliban took over Kabul, many civil servants were sacked. People don't have jobs. So the women's situation is very difficult. They're having to feed their families with very little money coming in. Many women have sold all their possessions, which is why in the first few months they were able to eat, to buy food. And now I spoke to women who say, we have sold everything. We have borrowed from our neighbors. Our neighbors have nothing anymore. They cannot lend us anything. They've no more food either. We've nothing more to sell. And their situation is really, really very, very serious. Many have fled. Those who could have fled the city have fled abroad, but many more cannot flee. And they're living in their homes. No chance of an education, no chance of a job, no proper food, not enough food to give their children, very little medical treatment at their disposal. So you can imagine what these women are going through right now.
All over the world, it is the case that with war, it is overwhelmingly civilians who suffer the brutality of war. When it comes to Kabul, what would be your picture of what would happen if it's bombed?
Half the city is already completely bombed and destroyed. Many people live in the ruins of the city. For those who do have homes, I can't begin to imagine the devastation, because as you say, it's the civilians who are hit first and foremost in any kind of bombing attack. I imagine that the authorities, most of the Taliban authorities, will have sought shelter, will have taken care of themselves and their families. That leaves the vast majority of the people in Kabul, the civilians, who've nowhere to run to, who've no bomb shelters to go to, and who are going to be totally devastated. Those who are injured will have very little treatment, very little medicine at their disposal. Although there are some hospitals working in Kabul, most of those won't accept women for treatment, for example, or girls. So any girls or women who are injured in any attack, there's only one hospital in the city where they can turn to. That treatment was been run with the help of international aid organizations. Those expatriate workers have had to leave the country, so it's unclear at this stage how much aid will remain in the city for people in need of help.
Imogen Lam, how much discussion in France is there now of the involvement in U.S. of the United States in the training, for example, of Osama bin Laden, the CIA's training of him when he came originally to Afghanistan, and also the fact that the U.S. just recently gave $40 million to the Taliban regime, ostensibly for the so-called war on drugs?
Everybody's aware of it. There's a lot on that in the newspapers. People are talking about it. And as I said earlier, people are very supportive of the American people at this time. At the same time, they are talking about the responsibility of successive American governments, and they are saying that the United States can no longer continue this kind of support of Islamic fundamentalist movements. It cannot continue as it has done up till now, its foreign policies, and it's got to reevaluate its position in the world and its involvement in world politics.
Is there a sense that the U.S. will clearly be attacking soon, not exactly clear where? And do people in France feel themselves getting on a war footing?
Most people think that the United States is definitely going to attack. Many think that it will be in Afghanistan. They don't really know who they're going to attack there or how they're going to find Osama bin Laden, for example. They're not so clear about French involvement. France has expressed support, but it's funny, when you talk to the older French men and women, they remember the Americans' role at the end of the Second World War. They remember when the Americans landed in France, and they say the Americans helped us. It's for us to help them now. So I imagine they're thinking more on the terms of military help. The younger people, not necessarily. They think we should be supportive, but not necessarily militarily.
Well, Imogen Lam, I want to thank you very much for being with us from Paris, France, just having returned in April from Afghanistan. And that does it for today's program. For those of you who are staying with us for our second hour, we'll be interviewing Robert Fisk in Beirut, Lebanon. He's interviewed Osama bin Laden as well as one of the parents.